Good evening. Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to the Arab Voices on Pacifica Radio, listener sponsored commercial free KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at www.kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Our guest tonight will be Alison Weir, executive director of If Americans Knew. We will discuss with her facts most Americans do not know about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and how all Americans are directly connected to it. We will also take your calls live on the air, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with Arab Voices Community Calendar.
Is it true that the Quran teaches violence, that Islam oppresses women, that Islam is intolerant of other faiths, that Muslims hate freedom and democracy, that your Muslim neighbor supports terror? To find out the answer to these questions, the Houston Muslim community is hosting an open house titled The Truth About Islam in Southeast Houston. Imam Sheikh Zubair, who has a PhD in Islamic and Social Studies, will be the keynote speaker. An open house will be held on Saturday, March 12th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Abu Bakr Siddiqui Mosque. That's at 8830 Old Galveston Road in Southeast Houston. This event is open to all people of all faiths. Refreshments will be served. For more information, call 713-397-9994.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center in Houston, the ACC, is inviting all children ages 10 to 16 to take part in its contest, Draw Your Favorite Rockets Player. Winners of the contest will go to the Houston Rockets versus the Dallas Mavericks game on Sunday, March 6th. To enter the drawing, please submit 8.5 by 11 paper with a drawing of your favorite Rockets player. On the back, write your name, address, phone number, age, name of your school, and a valid email address. Then mail it to ACC Houston, 10555 Stancliff Road, Houston, Texas, 77099. Attention Rockets Contest. For more information, visit www.acchouston.org or call 832-351-3366.
The ACC also offers a wide range of services to the community. For example, every Wednesday, Officer Muzaffar Siddiqui with the Houston Police Department visits the ACC from 1 till 3. If you have a case or a matter you would like to report to the police, get advice, file a report, or just ask questions about the Houston Police Department, you're invited to visit the ACC at 10555 Stancliff Road on any Wednesday between 1 and 3. For more information on this and other services provided by the ACC, visit acchouston.org or call them 832-351-3366.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask about the apartment on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
Been rented. Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Khalid bin Ali, and I am calling about the apartment you are renting on Park Street.
No longer available. Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim, call 800-669-9777. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Coming up next, Arab Voices News Summary. The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad told Time magazine in a recent interview that Syria will withdraw its troops from Lebanon in the next few months. Al-Assad said the withdrawal should be very soon and maybe in the next few months, not after that. Syria continues to hold about 14,000 troops in Lebanon that were deployed in an agreement with the Lebanese government and the Arab League under a bilateral accord known as the 1989 Taif Agreement.
Over the past few days, tens of thousands of Lebanese demonstrators gathered at the Martyrs Square in central Beirut in defiance of a government ban and massed at the heart of Beirut as the parliament held a debate on Rafiq Hariri's murder. On Monday, the Lebanese government of Prime Minister Omar Karami submitted its resignation, which warrants a search for a new government. Earlier today, Lebanese opposition leaders called for the resignation of top security chiefs in Lebanon in order to join the government. Opposition leader Walid Jumblatt called for the immediate resignation of Lebanon's public prosecutor and six top security officials to ensure the integrity of the probe into the assassination of the late former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. Opposition leaders say they will not join any talks on a new government until their demands are met.
The violence in Iraq under the U.S.-led occupation continues to rise. Earlier today, at least 10 Iraqis were killed and more than 36 were wounded when suicide car bombers attacked an Iraqi army base and a checkpoint in the Iraqi capital Baghdad. At the army base, at least 7 people were killed and 30 were wounded when the bomb blew up outside the army base in western Baghdad. Another 3 soldiers were killed and 6 were wounded when a car bomber blew himself up at an army checkpoint in southwest Baghdad. Today's attacks came 2 days after a suicide car bomb killed at least 118 people in Halla, the deadliest single attack since the U.S. occupation of Iraq started nearly 2 years ago. Hundreds of angry Iraqis protested in Halla yesterday to demand improved security measures after this deadly car bombing. Also yesterday, an Iraqi judge and his lawyer's son, who were assigned to the special tribunal that is tasked to Saddam Hussein's trial, were assassinated in the Iraqi capital Baghdad.
Several other Iraqis were also killed over the past few days by U.S. occupation troops, including a woman and her children in the city of Ramadi. The woman and her children were killed when a U.S. Air Force bombed their house. Several checkpoints have been set up by the U.S. forces in Ramadi city, with students studying at the Al Anbar University unable to reach their classrooms. The U.S. actions have enraged Iraqis, particularly since the U.S. troops killed at least 5 civilians and injured 16 in the area. Al Jazeera Satellite TV reported that Iraqis were being prevented from moving in and out of the city. The gates to the city have been shut by U.S. forces after they withdrew from the neighboring Al-Haqlaniya city. Al Jazeera also reported that in Al-Rubta city, U.S. occupation forces were barricading people, preventing them from moving inside the city before 9 a.m. and from exiting or entering it after 5 p.m.
The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, and Human Rights First filed suit in federal district court in the state of Illinois against Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on behalf of 8 former detainees who said they were severely tortured. All 8 were subsequently released without being charged. Lucas Guttentag, lead counsel in the case, said, quote, "Secretary Rumsfeld bears direct and ultimate responsibility for this descent into horror by personally authorizing unlawful interrogation techniques and by abdicating his legal duty to stop torture," unquote. The latest suit against Rumsfeld focuses on an order he signed in December 2002 that authorized new interrogation techniques for detainees in the so-called War on Terror being held at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. The suit alleges that when evidence became overwhelming that prisoners were being tortured, Rumsfeld turned a blind eye. The ACLU had filed similar complaints against 3 other senior officers on behalf of prisoners mistreated at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison.
The Palestinian National Authority, or PNA, has strongly denounced the explosion that occurred in Tel Aviv on Friday, which killed 4 Israelis and injured 50 others. The PNA released a statement saying it strongly denounces any targeting of civilians, whether Palestinians or Israelis. Israel has accused Syria of having a hand in Friday's attack, but the Syrian Foreign Minister Farouk Ashara rejected the accusations that Damascus had a role in the bombing.
Foreign ministers and top officials from 23 nations and 6 international institutions, including UN Secretary General Kofi Annan and U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, attended a day-long meeting in London regarding the situation in occupied Palestine. Israel, however, did not attend the meeting. The final version of the meeting's conclusions applauded the Palestinian Authority's blueprint for reforms, calling it a major step in implementing its roadmap commitments. The statement also said, quote, "At the same time, participants urged and expect action by Israel in relation to its own roadmap commitments," unquote. In the meeting, U.S. Secretary of Defense Condoleezza Rice pointed to Israel's planned withdrawal from Gaza and parts of the West Bank, saying Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's government must help not hinder the quest for peace. She said, quote, Israel must also take no actions that prejudges a final settlement and must help ensure that a new Palestinian state is truly viable, end quote. Condoleezza Rice also said, a state of scattered territories will not work and peace must be nurtured by many hands if it is to flourish.
In the meantime, Israeli occupation forces yesterday arrested Sheikh Taysira Tamimi, the chief Palestinian Islamic justice in occupied Jerusalem, together with other religious judges. In the West Bank town of Salfit, Israeli army bulldozers uprooted dozens of olive trees in Palestinian lands. Residents there said Israel uprooted olive trees and razed vast tracts of land for the construction of a new portion of the apartheid wall in the town. In Hebron, Israeli colonizers from the colony of Kiryat Arba destroyed several vast areas of Palestinian-owned land under the pretext of paving a new Jewish-only road on Palestinian land. Last week, Israeli bulldozers ran over two Palestinian children and wounded them in Azun in the West Bank. Mohammed Adwan, a 13-year-old, and Salah Bakir, a 12-year-old, were wounded when a colonizer ran them over by a car which he was driving at the town in the northern entrance of the town. Palestinian medics said the Israeli troops denied them access to a hospital in Israel.
Finally, and on Monday, Israeli occupation forces attacked a peaceful rally in a protest against the construction of the apartheid wall in Beit Zurik village in occupied Jerusalem. Israeli troops, backed by military bulldozers, broke into the village and started razing vast areas of arable land, uprooting several greenhouses for the sake of constructing the apartheid wall. A number of villagers were wounded and suffered from suffocation as the Israeli troops hurled tear gas canisters and copper-coated bullets against the demonstrators, spreading a state of horror among the participants, mostly children and women. On Saturday, Mazen Ahmed bin Hassan, 19 years old Palestinian, was shot and killed by the Israeli occupation troops in Gaza. Another Palestinian died on Saturday of wounds he sustained previously by the Israeli occupation forces. Mohammed Basha was critically wounded all over his body a few weeks ago by the Israeli occupation soldiers. Mohammed died Saturday at the age of 16. In Hebron, a 14-year-old Palestinian girl was critically wounded when Israeli occupation troops shot her with 6 bullets. We will take a short break now, and when we come back, we will talk with Alison Weir, Executive Director of If Americans Knew. We will discuss with her facts most Americans do not know about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and how all Americans are directly connected to it. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Welcome back to the Arab Voices on Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at www.kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. With us now live over the phone from California is Alison Weir. Alison is the founder and executive director of If Americans Knew. She is a contributor to the New Intifada and the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. She traveled extensively throughout the occupied Gaza Strip and West Bank as a freelance reporter and has given presentations on the Middle East on Capitol Hill, the Center for Policy Analysis on Palestine, and numerous other venues throughout the United States and Canada. Alison, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Can you please first give us and our listeners more information about the work you do with If Americans Knew and what is that all about?
I'd love to. We're a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to provide information on topics of importance that are either underreported or misreported in the American media. And our number one area of focus, because it so much fits that definition, is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We have a website. I hope listeners will look at it. It's www.ifamericansknew.org. And on that, we provide facts, history, and background about the Palestinian territories and about this issue. We also have another one of our major functions is to analyze U.S. media coverage of Israel and Palestine. And we've done a number of very strong statistical studies of coverage of how the American media covered this topic. And sadly, we've shown just an enormous distortion in the information that Americans are getting.
Give us more about that. For example, do you have any information about how the latest attack in Tel Aviv was reported here in the media? And although that was not the last event in the occupied territories there, there has been at least 3 or 4 Palestinians killed, murdered since then. But this is what's being reported here. They usually report stories when Israelis are injured or killed, and they rarely report when Palestinians are killed.
That's exactly what we found. For example, in looking at the San Francisco Chronicle, which is just a very typical newspaper, we found that, for example, the six-month period that we looked at, they had covered 150% of Israeli children's deaths, because they covered on one death several news stories, and of Palestinian children's deaths, which I think to most Americans are just as tragic, they reported only 5% of the time. So Americans have no idea that's going on. And this recent incident, as you say, that's been played up so much in the American media is truly outrageous for Americans who feel we just want the facts, we don't want it filtered or distorted, we want the facts, we'll decide for ourselves. So to me it was shocking to see across the board, and truthfully quite a few Pacifica stations in their news broadcasts made this error as well. We found that often they were reporting that the recent Tel Aviv suicide bombing had, quote, shattered the truce or broken the calm. Well, the fact, as you know, and I'm sure as many of your listeners know, because listening to your show, I assume, is very excellent, but what most Americans had no idea was that the so-called truce had been shattered within 24 hours of its announcement on February 8th. When 2 Palestinians were killed that first day. Between the time the truce was announced and the suicide bombing, at least 8 Palestinians had been killed, at least 1 or 2 of them minors, and at least, again, these are conservative figures, at least 36 had been injured. Now, some places reported this even worse. For example, the Los Angeles Times, which my background is in journalism. The LA Times is truthfully considered one of the best newspapers in the United States. Well, the LA Times reported in its lead paragraph that the suicide bombing had broken a months-long relative calm. Well, let's look at this months-long relative calm. It turns out that in the previous 3 months, at least 170 Palestinians had been killed, and almost 300 had been injured. Most Americans would not consider that a calm, and we need the facts. They should have put those numbers in that story right at the top, and Americans could have judged a little bit more about what's actually happening in the Palestinian territories.
You know, something interesting for a person like me, and I'm sure probably like you, who monitors the news media from various sources, it seems that the Israeli media, even the Haaretz of Israel and Yedioth Ahronot and other newspapers, they actually report more accurate, sometimes more accurate information than the U.S. media right here.
That's definitely true. For example, just take the recent suicide bombing. Again, you know, it is, to me, as I'm sure to you, loss of human life is tragic. We don't like seeing it happen. That's why so many people dislike wars, because people, of course, die on both sides. What the Israeli media broadcast, actually, they broadcast, but also it was in the Jerusalem Post, an Israeli newspaper, and Haaretz, and elsewhere, that the victims of the suicide bombing were largely, almost overwhelmingly, soldiers that had taken part in invasions in the Palestinian territories that had killed hundreds and hundreds of Palestinian civilians, men, women, and children. That's a fact. We need to know that fact. I'm not judging one way or the other on this, but I feel that as Americans, we need to be fully informed. And that was an important piece of the information that was screened out of our information. Now, when Israel kills Palestinians, quite often it will assassinate people that it terms, quote, militants. That's always in the headline. The news media seem to feel that that's a significant fact to report to their readers. And yet here when we have the reverse, that information is screened out. That's just not right.
Yes, and most of the Israeli actions, if not all, in the occupied Palestinian territories have been somehow directly financed by the United States government, many thanks to the over $15 million that we give to Israel every single day in military or in aid, in addition to more military equipment. What can you tell us about these facts and these statistics?
Well, that is such an important fact, because it's something I really knew nothing about this issue 5 years ago. I'm not Muslim or Palestinian. I don't happen to be Jewish. So I really had never paid much attention to Israel and Palestine, sadly. You know, it's a huge world and there's so much to look into. I had never learned about this one. But the fact is that Americans need to know that we give more money to tiny Israel than we give to any other nation on earth, far more. We give more than to all of sub-Saharan Africa put together, for example. This is an enormous fact that we need to be aware of. That means that every action that Israel takes, and believe me, having seen them firsthand, these are atrocities. They're being committed with our tax money. Now, most Americans, if they saw the facts there, if they knew what was going on, would not approve this use of their tax money. Right now, I live in California, as you mentioned. I just read about a library nearby that is closing down because they don't have enough funding for the library. And yet, we give $10 to $15 million a day to Israel. I just think that should be carefully considered, and Americans should know that fact. And once again, the American media really virtually never reported to us.
So that would be equivalent to way over $5 billion, that's with a B, every year, and these are pretty much tax dollars
that
we Americans here pay to the government, and they give that to Israel. Mm-hmm. And Israel, after all, a country that is occupying right now three nations, really. They occupy the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and Jerusalem. They continue to occupy the Golan Heights, which is a Syrian land occupied by Israel in 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel continues to occupy the Sheba'a farms in southern Lebanon. And that's three countries, or three parts of countries, occupied since at least 1967.
That's
Israel
right.
Stands in violation of over 72 United Nations resolutions. And everybody's now talking about Syria, although Syria said we are going to pull out of Lebanon, and it wasn't a military forced occupation, it was an accord. And everybody's talking about Syria. Even Israel is making comments about Syria, how pathetic it is when they are even occupying Syria and occupying parts of Lebanon too.
That's correct. It's truly absurd. For example, again, my organization, we just feel strongly that Americans need and deserve all the information, not just some of it. And some of the information that we're not getting, for example, is that Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons. Largely, they stole the technology from the United States, beginning back in at least the late 50s. This has all been documented. There are excellent, very reliable books that tell us all the information about it. They're rarely carried by bookstores, but on our website you can find out about them. They're by extremely reliable authors, for example, by Donald Neff, who was Time Magazine bureau chief for many years. He was a senior editor at Time Magazine. So let's look at the facts here. Americans need to understand this part of this issue. Here's Israel with hundreds of nuclear weapons. In addition to that, they have a history of invading their surrounding countries. They did that in 1967. They've done that several times. So as we all know, deterrence is extremely important. During the Cold War, the argument was that the U.S. needed nuclear weapons because that would prevent the Soviet Union from attacking us. And the Soviets, of course, had nuclear weapons because they said that that would attack, you know, would prevent the U.S. from attacking them. Most people are practical and realize there's a balance of power. And if someone that especially is clearly your enemy and has a history of invading nearby countries has nuclear weapons, then there's an incentive for other nations in the Middle East to get nuclear weapons themselves. Now, the fact is, no one else has them now. There is no indication whatsoever that Iran is even close yet to nuclear weapons. There's no indication whatsoever that Syria has any ability to have nuclear weapons. The Middle East is a nuclear-free zone except for Israel,
which is the only country that refuses to sign the non-proliferation treaty.
That's correct.
Now, it is important, the work you do and that website that you're maintaining, If Americans Knew, it has so much information and so much facts in it there. I think it's really vital and important for us here, Americans, to know all these facts. Mm-hmm. Because, I'll mention some examples. Here on this particular show, every once in a while, we get callers who call in and say, you know, why are we wasting our time? Let them have it at each other, the Palestinian Israelis. Why do you need the America? You keep saying that America needs to intervene. The United States government need to be, to push for the peace process. Why do we care? Why do we need this stuff? And they don't realize that we are heavily involved, even us, the individuals, with our tax dollars that we just talked about, because that's what finances what Israel is doing. Now, to bring that picture of what Israel is precisely doing on the ground, since it's not reported accurately in the mainstream media here, tell us more about what you've witnessed when you visited the occupied Palestinian territories. What changed your mind since that visit?
Yes, I'd love to explain that. And also just one point about what you were just saying. I think it's such an important one. Many, many Americans, most surveys show it's approximately 3/4 of the American public, believe you really should just not be taking a side in the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Of course, the fact is, what they don't know is that we are enormously taking one side through this massive amount of tax money. So basically, 3/4 of the American public is saying we should stop this enormous aid to Israel. They just don't yet know that that's what they're saying. But in terms of what I personally saw, what happened with me, and I'll tell you, none of my college graduate, you know, children would ever have predicted that I would be doing any of this. Approximately 5 years ago, I was the editor of a small community newspaper in Sausalito, California. At that time, writing about the local school district, the fishing fleet, just very local journalism. But when the current uprising began, my youngest son had just started college, so I had a little more time. All three of my children were out of the home. And I was just curious about what this uprising was about. When I just paid closer attention to the news reports, I quickly noticed that I was getting a very one-sided view of it. I was happy to get that amount of information, but I wanted to get all the information. I could tell it didn't seem that that was happening. So with the internet, I went on and I was able, of course, to find out so much more. After several months of that, I was increasingly drawn into this issue because I was increasingly outraged at how much of what I was reading that was going on and was being reported, for example, in Britain, Europe, the Middle East, and elsewhere, wasn't being reported in the American press. So after a few months of that, I decided that I was a journalist and I needed to just go and see for myself what really was going on. So I spent a month traveling throughout Gaza and the West Bank in February and March of 2001. And I saw just enormous devastation. And remember, this was only about 5 months into the Intifada. And of course, a lot of Americans don't know Intifada just means uprising. The American Revolutionary War against Britain was the American Intifada. So what I saw there were whole neighborhoods in Khan Yunus, for example. There's an area called Tufa that was just destroyed. It looked to me like ruins of World War II Europe. And it occurred to me when I was there that I was in a war zone, and yet it was a war zone where only one side had a military, and that was Israel. The other side basically had rocks, a few small rifles and guns, and some homemade mortars, although at that time they didn't even have many of those yet. So I saw civilian neighborhoods just destroyed. I saw homes with bullets all through them. Some people, though, were still having to live in those homes, and they had their children, and they had mattresses just in the middle of the home where they hoped that the Israeli shelling wouldn't kill them. I saw children in hospitals that had bullets in their stomachs, in their backs, in their heads. I was just back in the Palestinian territories just a few months ago, and I was up in Nablus in the Balata refugee camp. I went to hospitals there where I saw children with shattered teeth who had been shot by Israeli military. I talked to international American and British witnesses who had witnessed Israeli soldiers intentionally taking very careful aim and shooting children consistently. In one case, the Associated Press, AP, there was a cameraman there who's from AP. He took video footage of a boy being shot intentionally by an Israeli soldier. He sent that to the Bureau in Jerusalem, and the Jerusalem Bureau, rather than sending it out on the wire, as ethically and journalistically they should have done, they erased it.
Now, in addition, Israel has been targeting international peace activists and media personnel throughout the occupied territories. As a matter of fact, in a couple of weeks, it will be the second anniversary of the death of, or the murder of Rachel Corrie, a U.S. citizen, an American person who was a member of the International Solidarity Movement, and she was in Gaza, in Rafah, and she was just protesting what Israel was about to do of demolishing a Palestinian house that belonged to a doctor, and the Israeli bulldozer clearly ran over her and murdered her, an Israeli military bulldozer.
That's
and
right.
And this has been going on and on for many, many years. I want to remind our listeners of the phone number to call and ask questions of our guest, who is Alison Weir, the founder and executive director of F Americans New. That number is 713-526-5738. Again, 713-526-KPFT. Let me now go to my co-host, Mark.
Alison, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, you gave a pretty specific example of a boy that was deliberately targeted and it was captured on video, and you said the video footage was erased.
That's right.
I'm asking you to speculate a little bit, but why do you think that it was erased, and what is the underlying motivation behind all this?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're bringing that up, because this to me was so outrageous. I went to the AP Bureau in Jerusalem and burst in. We had a movie camera with us, a video camera, to film them, and I asked them specifically about that issue, and they said, quote, "We won't give any interviews. Talk to corporate communications in New York." And when I talked to corporate communications in New York, the man there said, well, I'll find out about it and I'll get back to you. And so then he did get back to me. I got back to him. And then he said, oh, yes, we've decided that's an internal matter and we won't say say anything about it.
Internal to the state of Israel?
Well, actually, I think that's probably very astute. I think what he meant was internal to AP.
Right.
But, you know, AP is actually, it's very interesting. It's actually basically a cooperative. It is owned by all of its member newspapers. So if American newspapers would wake up to what's going on, and I think many editors have no idea this kind of skewed reporting is occurring, if they would wake up to it and demand from AP better news coverage, I think they could have an effect. Now, as far as why they erased it, I'll give your listeners some information, and then we can all just draw our own conclusions. Of course, I don't know what was in someone's mind when they did that. But here's something very interesting. I discovered when I was in the West Bank that almost all the reports that come from the West Bank are phoned to the Jerusalem Bureau of the AP. And then the Jerusalem Bureau is the one that sends them out. So occasionally we'll read, certainly here in the LA Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, I assume down, you know, your newspapers in Texas, we'll see a byline that will have a Palestinian journalist's name on it. Well, it turns out that that journalist from the West Bank almost never, in fact, it might be safe to never, but to say never, but, you know, I'm not sure. I certainly know almost never has he written that story. He's called in the facts, and then the Jerusalem Bureau is the one that writes whatever story they decide to write, and then they send out whatever they decide to send out. Now, when we visited the Jerusalem Bureau, it was in, again, a lot of Americans, I wouldn't have known this before, but most of Jerusalem is now either occupied or part of Israel, and certainly the part where the AP Bureau is in Israel. It was staffed, it appeared to me, by a number, maybe all of them, certainly a high number of them, seemed to be Israeli citizens. I think a number were American citizens, but I think it's quite possible that they had dual citizenship with Israel. I don't know. But it was located in Israel. It seems possible. People, you know, we're all human beings, and it seems very possible that the people there are seeing things from the Israeli point of view. They're not in the West Bank. They're not seeing what I saw. And it appears they may very likely have a very strong emotional attachment to Israel. All of these may play a part. I have no idea what went on. I would have loved to have them tell me.
Now, you said earlier in the show that you were Jewish. Is that right?
Actually, I'm not.
Okay.
I happen to be Presbyterian, but certainly many of the people working on this, and some of the people who first were responsible for informing me quite a bit and are still close allies in providing information to the American public, are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
So we all know that, fortunately, what Israel does, although it claims to be acting in the names of all Jews everywhere, this is the kind of terminology they use, it's incorrect and unfair.
Well, we have to also remember that the Crusades were supposedly carried out in the names of all Christians, and that didn't
exactly apply
to
That's
a lot
right.
of Christians at the time. So we have a lot of calls. Saeed, do you want to start taking some phone calls? Because we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, let me just mention there are a lot of Jewish organizations and groups that completely disagree with what Israel is doing in the occupied Palestinian territories, groups outside of the Israel and groups inside Israel that do not agree, and they are vocal against the Israeli occupation and the Israeli atrocities in the occupied Palestinian territories. We have so many questions, but let's, as Mark mentioned, give our listeners the opportunity to ask our guest questions. And our guest tonight is Alison Weir, the executive director and founder of If Americans Knew. So if you have any questions, please give us a call at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And let's go ahead and take our first caller for the night. Looks like our phone bank is full. Next one is Ahmed, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to listen to you, Alison. I, too, lived in the Bay Area back in the early 70s, and in fact, you mentioned Sausalito, and I lived there, too, on 35 Rodeo Street. But you mentioned the Chronicle in San Francisco. By the way, I monitor very closely the Houston Chronicle, which is a sister company to the San Francisco Chronicle, And absolutely, it's extremely very biased, and it's been over 12 years I've been trying to put one op-ed in the paper, and they don't publish it. But based, you know, listening to you and what you're saying, I just somehow, I know nothing about you, but I somehow I believe you're related to Benjamin Weir, are you not?
I'm actually not. I'm asked that question a lot, and he sounds like a wonderful man, so I wish I could claim that, but I have no relation to him that I know of.
Well, you seem to have the same beautiful character he does. He was one of the hostages way back in Lebanon.
Yes.
And I've had the pleasure to meet him, and I truly consider him man of God, and of course, being Presbyterian too. That's why I thought I'd put the two together, certainly good. Now, my question is this. Just like the Houston Chronicle, really they're extremely biased, but, you know, we learn a lot about what's going on in the Middle East, but what can we do to make a change, rather than, mm-hmm. We continually hear the stories and we know what's going on, but what is it to be done to make the change?
That's such an important question, and there's so much we can do, and of course we're all obligated to do it.
Thank you, Ahmed, for your call. We're going to just tell our listeners that we're going to disconnect you right after you ask a question, because the phone bank is completely full. So thanks, Ahmed, for calling.
Thank you.
I'll try to answer it quickly so other people can ask their questions. But what we can do and must do is phone the media politely but firmly, giving them information that they perhaps did not have. We can write letters to the editor. I know we all do that, and they don't always get published. But Hello?
Yes, sorry about that. Go ahead, Elsa.
But the more we write, the more they do get published. Most important to me is we can provide information to our communities. On our website, we have a lot of excellent documentaries and booklets. We have materials we can ship to people across the country. So you could take, for example, our booklets about the history and about the current situation, written by a number of diverse writers of various backgrounds. And you can take them to your libraries, you can put them in schools, you can give them to neighborhoods. Some people that have never put on an event before will put on an event at their local Rotary Club, for example, or in the library, and have an event where it's just information about Israel and Palestine. I'm actually going to be traveling to Texas in April. Some people there are putting on events at various places across the state, and I'll be giving some talks about the situation and about media coverage. So those are all things we can do.
All right, let's take more callers for our listeners, and the next one is from Daniel. Daniel, you're in the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you all for hosting the show. I love the show.
Thank you.
And I just want to say, finally, I found the dial by accident, but finally, somebody's out there speaking the truth.
Make sure to bookmark it.
I get so frustrated with the mainstream media only, airing the catchy headline. I'm looking for the truth, and I feel like Allison did where she was 5 years ago. She didn't really know anything about what was going on, because we're just not given the truth. We're
right.
Given what they want us to hear. And my question is, what can we do, just as the average citizen, to try to turn this around to where we pressure the mainstream media to put the stories on that count, and not just
I think that's such an important question. As I was saying, we can tell our neighbors, tell our communities, put on events in our libraries, in our churches, in our synagogues, informing people what's going on. I personally like to do it in a very unpolitical way, a very bipartisan way, not introducing ideology, et cetera. We don't need to look for differences. I like to do it just here are facts. Republicans and or Democrats and others can just all take the information. And when I speak, the interesting, hopeful thing is that my experience is that when I speak to different groups all over the country, whether it's a conservative audience or a progressive audience, I have always found an overwhelmingly positive, concerned reaction to what I tell them. And then they're all asking just what you did. What can we do about this?
Very well. 713-526-5738 is the number to call and ask questions.
And Said, what was the name of that last caller? Was it Danielle?
Danielle, yes.
Danielle, we're very glad you found KPFT. We don't advertise the station as much as we should. I hope you'll be a regular listener and tune in every night.
And tell all your friends everywhere. We have live broadcasts on the web at kpft.org also.
And you know, I always forget actually one thing that people can do. This is so important, and yet it always feels awkward to say it. But truthfully, we're a nonprofit organization. We operate on a shoestring, and donations are wonderfully helpful to us doing this. So anybody that goes to our website, you can donate right through our PayPal or something like that.
And what is that website again, Allison?
It's www.ifamericansknew.org.
Very well. And we will put a link to that on our own website, www.arabvoices.net, hopefully later this evening. Let's take our next caller, and I'm going to ask the remaining callers to have short questions since we have so many of them on hold. The next one is Rick. Rick, you're on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I wanted to make light of Iran's alleged nuclear weapons program. Specifically, does the Israeli press actually report that Iran's nuclear plant actually produces the wrong type of plutonium, it's plutonium-241, which is not fissible, and that Israel's plant at Dimona, which is a heavy water graphite reactor, produces the right kind of plutonium, plutonium-239, which is ideal for making nuclear weapons.
As far as I know, that's completely unreported.
Like promoting this sort of nuclear alchemy the Iranians are performing. And if they're that good, then we need to bring them over here and, you know, find some alternative energy source that'd be good at it.
All right. Thanks for your call,
sure.
Rick. Allison, do you have any comments on that?
That's an important point. I'm so glad he brought that out. But I think in terms of the Israeli media, a great deal of this is reported there, as we said earlier. Now, the Israeli population also, however, is somewhat manipulated by their media. So it sort of goes both ways there.
All right, let's move forward. And the next one is Muhammad. Muhammad, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Saeed, for a great show. Allison, thanks for what you're doing. The question, I mean, your statement when you say we Americans give, you know, such and such billions of dollars a year to Israel, is it really giving or it's more, you know, Israel is just, you know, stealing that money one way or another through some evil means and ways, like manipulating the American public, controlling the media, just whatever they do culturally and immorally in here, you know, the Congress, their lobby, etc. I mean, just be fair to the average hardworking American who really don't like to see their money goes that way. Like you said, go to fund atrocities against Palestinians and humanity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mama.
That's a very good point. I'm so happy you brought it up. Because largely what most Americans don't know is the military aid and the other types of aid that are going to Israel are, according to almost all true experts in the State Department and in the Pentagon, are actually overall very counter to American needs and to U.S. interests in the area. A lot of people don't know that, but that's sort of my expertise because I especially wanted to know the American role in this. The reason that, you know, then the question is, why then do we give so much to Israel? Well, it's very simple. You know, we are a democracy, and at the top rung of government, actually just below us, the people, are our elected representatives. They're the ones that make the final decision, not the State Department, not the Pentagon. It's Congress and the President. And Congress and the President, as we know, want to be reelected. They want to retain their influence. And to do that, they have found for many years that they need to take a pro-Israel stand. There has been a very extremely well-organized, very alert pro-Israel lobby for many, many years. And the rest of the country has been very negligent. I'm an example of that. Many of us from Christian backgrounds did not pay attention one way or the other. So whenever you have a special interest on one side of any issue and you have no one lobbying on the other side, then it'll go in the direction of the special interest, and that's what's happened with funding of Israel. Now, one topic I just want to make sure to mention that's so important, and again, this can be a way to start informing your neighbors. many, many people. I happen to have grown up in a military family. My father was in the Air Force, and had uncles in the Army and Navy. And I had never known about a 1967 event in which Israeli forces attacked brutally a U.S. Navy ship called the USS Liberty. They killed 34 American sailors, injured 172, and tried their best to sink the whole ship. They shot up life rafts. They machine-gunned stretcher bearers. It's just astonishing to learn about this, especially to me, since I had never known about it at all. And yet the information is there. We have a lot on our website. It's in a number of books. You have to look for it, but I've had the honor of interviewing a number of the men that were on board that ship. So I think when Americans start learning that Israel attacked an American ship so ruthlessly and so intentionally, it begins to help people raise the question, well, is this country an ally? Are they representing American principles or not?
All right, let's move on. We have a few minutes left, so please make your questions short. The next one is Anthony. Anthony, you're on there.
Oh, yes, thank you very much, Sid. Really quick, going back to that USS Liberty thing, I'd just like to point out that I'm pretty sure that the point of the Israelis attacking the USS Liberty was to try and draw the United States in the 67 war. I'm not sure if you brought that up or anything.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and what I was going to ask you about is, do you think that I was reading a lot of things about the Arab League, and they have a lot of things posted on their website about the occupation, and they were talking about how the Israelis had burned down a synagogue while they were rolling through Palestine, and I just wanted you to bring up, I mean, about how the Israelis, are all proud and everything about how they bring up the great foundations of a Jewish state, but a lot of the Zionist leaders that control Israel, or pretty much all of it, mm-hmm. They lie, they say that they're Jewish, and they're really atheistic Zionists that are really out for the malbeing and maltreatment of just about everyone. They're ruthless leaders. It doesn't really matter if they're Jewish, Muslim, or Christian.
Anthony, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're almost out of time. We need to just give Allison a quick chance to respond.
I was just going to say, if you could please explain that more. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call.
That's right. Well, it's certainly, I think, again, a lot of us don't know the ruthlessness and the fanaticism of the founders of Israel. When Zionism, which was just the movement to form a Jewish state in the Middle East, or actually anywhere in the world, they just happened to settle on Palestine for, that's a long story. But anyway, that Zionism originally represented a very tiny and fringe portion of the world Jewish population. It was really not representing Judaism whatsoever. And it has remained quite often extremely fanatic, and it's often very opposed to the more observant people of the religion. So I think that is important to know about. In the King David Hotel, for example, which is one of the acts, there were many acts, by the way, of terrorism by the Zionists, the early Israelis, against everyone. The King David Hotel killed, I think it was about 91 people, and 17 of them were Jewish. After Israel had been formed, they wanted people from Iraq. Again, when you tell too much of this, people start to, it's just so incredible. But there is evidence, it has come out, it's there, anybody can check these facts, and I encourage people to check them. But the Mossad, which is Israel's intelligence agency, did blow up synagogues in some of the surrounding Middle Eastern countries to make it seem that, quote, anti-Semitism was growing and the Jews in those nations needed to leave and move to Israel.
And unfortunately, we are nearing the top of the hour. We're saying sorry to the remaining callers, Najat, Clay, and the others who are still on hold. We won't be able to take your calls because we have only a few seconds left. Allison, the information you've given us has been very valuable, and I'm sure there is a whole lot more. So we'd like to invite you at a later time to come in again and be our guest to share this knowledge with us and our listeners. We want to thank you so much, Allison, for being our guest tonight. That's Allison Weir, the Executive Director of If Americans Knew. Thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you so much. And people could look on our website to see when my speaking engagement will be in Texas next.
And that's ifamericansknew.org.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. Many thanks to my co-host Mark and Hazim, the volunteer tonight, who was taking care of the call-in center. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.